noticing the gems. I turn in place, looking at each of them with rising curiosity. Raffaele steps back, observes me for a moment, and then crosses his arms with a sweep of silk sleeves. Now I want you to relax, clear your mind. I take a deep breath, then try to do as he says. Silence. Nothing happens. I still my thoughts, thinking of calm water, of night. Nearby, Raffaele lowers his head in a nearly imperceptible nod. I feel an odd tingling in my arms and at the back of my head. When I look down at the stones, I now see that five of them have started to glow, as if lit from within, in shades of crimson, white, blue, orange, and black. Raffaele glides around me in a slow circle, his eyes alight with curiosity. The way he's circling me feels almost predatory, especially when he passes to the weak side of my vision, and I have to turn my face in order to keep him in view. He lifts one foot slightly, his bejeweled slipper pushing away each stone that did not glow. He picks up the five remaining stones, returns to the desk, and lays them carefully out. Diamond, rosite, verisium, amber, nightstone. I bite my lip, impatient to find out what the five mean. Good. Now I want you to look at the diamond. For a moment, Raffaele doesn't move. All he does is stare straight at me, his gaze calm and level, his hands slack at his sides. The distance between us seems to hum with life. I try to concentrate on the stone and keep myself from trembling. Raffaele tilts his head. I gasp. A rush of energy courses through me, something strong and light that threatens to carry me off my feet. I steady myself against the wall. A memory rushes through my mind, so vivid and bright that I could swear I was reliving it. I am 8 years old, and Violetta is 6. We run out to greet our father, who has just returned from a month-long trip to Estensia. He picks up Violetta, laughs, and spins her in a circle. She squeals in delight as I stand by. Later that afternoon, I challenge Violetta to a race through the trees behind our home. I pick a route that is full of rocks and crevices, knowing full well that she has just recovered from a fever and is still weak. When Violetta trips over a root, skinning her knees, I smile and don't stop to help her. I keep running, running, running until the wind and I become one. I don't need my father to spin me in a circle. I can already fly. Later that night, I study the scarred, eyeless side of my face, the strings of my silver hair. Then I pick up my hairbrush and smash the mirror into 1,000 pieces. The memory fades away. The bright glow pulses inside the diamond for a moment before fading away. I take a shuddering breath, lost in a haze of wonder and guilt at the memory. What was that? Raffaele's eyes widen, then narrow. He looks down at the diamond. I glance at it too, half expecting it to glow with some color, but instead I see nothing. Maybe I'm too far away to tell. He looks at me. Fortuna, goddess of prosperity. Diamond shows your alignment to power and ambition, the fire inside you. Adelina, can you hold your arms out to either side? I hesitate, but when Raffaele gives me an encouraging smile, I do as he says. I hold out my arms so they are parallel to the floor. Raffaele moves the diamond aside and replaces it with the verisium now bathed in light. He studies me for a bit, then reaches out and pretends to pull at something invisible in the air. I feel an odd pushing sensation like someone is trying to shove me aside, searching for my secrets. I instinctively push back. The verisium flashes and lets off a brilliant blue glow. The memory that comes to me this time? I am 12. Violetta and I sit together in our library, where I read to her from a book cataloging flowers. I can still remember those illuminated pages. The parchment crinkling like skeleton leaves. Roses are so beautiful. Violetta sighs in her innocent way, admiring the book's images. Like you. I stay silent. A while later, when she goes off to play at the harpsichord with father, I venture out to the garden to look at our rose bushes. I study one of the roses carefully and then look at my crooked ring finger that my father broke years earlier. On a strange impulse, I reach out and close my hand tightly around the rose's stem. A dozen thorns slash into the flesh of my palm. Still, I clench my jaw and tighten my grip as hard as I can. You're right, Violeta. Finally, I release the stem, staring in wonder at the blood that blooms on my hand. Scarlet stains the thorns. Pain enhances beauty, I remember thinking. The scene fades, nothing else happens. Raffaele tells me to turn back around, and when I do, I notice the Vrishium is glowing a faint blue. At the same time, it gives off a tremulous note of music that reminds me of a broken flute. Sapientus, God of Wisdom, Raffaele says, you align with Vrishium for the truth in oneself, knowledge, and curiosity. He moves on to the rosite without another word. For this one, he beckons me over to him and tells me to hum in front of it. When I do, a faint tingling runs down my throat, numbing it. The stone glows red for a long moment, then fades in a shower of glitter, the memory that accompanies it. I am 15. Father has arranged for several suitors to come to our home and take a look at both Violeta and me. Violeta stays demure and sweet the whole time, her tiny mouth puckered into a rosy smile. I hate it when they look at me too, she always tells me. But you have to try, Adelina. I catch her in front of her mirror, pulling her neckline down so that it shows more of her curves, smiling at the way her hair falls over her shoulders. I don't know what to make of it. The men admire her at the dinner. They chuckle and clink glasses. I follow Violeta's example. I flirt and smile as hard as I can. I notice the hunger in their eyes whenever they glance at me. The way their stares linger on the line of my collarbone, my breasts. I know they want me, too. They just don't want me as a wife. One of them jokes about cornering me the next time I walk alone in our garden. I laugh with him. I imagine mixing poison into his tea, then watching his face turn purple and anguished. I picture myself leaning over him, looking on patiently, with my chin resting in my hands, admiring his dying, writhing body as I count out the minutes. Violeta doesn't think such things. She sees happiness and hope, love and inspiration. She is our mother. I am our father. Again, the memory disappears into thin air, and again I find myself staring at Raffaele. There is a weariness in his gaze now, distance mixed with interest. Amare, God of Love, he says. Rosite, for the passion and compassion in oneself, blinding and red. Finally, he holds up the amber and nightstone. The amber gives off a beautiful golden-orange color, but the nightstone is an ugly rock, dark, lumpy, and dull. What do I do this time? I ask. Hold them. He takes one of my hands in his. I blush at how smooth the palm of his hand is, how gentle his fingers feel. When he brushes past my broken finger, I wince and flinch away. He meets my gaze. Although he doesn't ask why I reacted to the touch, he seems to understand. It will be okay, he murmurs. Hold your hand open. I do, and he carefully places the stones in my hand. My fingers close around them. A violent shock ripples through me, a wave of bitter fury. Raffaele jumps backward. I gasp, then collapse to the ground. The whispers in the dark corners of my mind now spring free of their cages and fill my thoughts with their noise. They bring a flurry of memories of everything I've already seen and everything I thought to suppress. My father breaking my finger, shouting at me, striking me, ignoring me. The night in the rain. His shattered ribs. The long nights in the Inquisition's dungeons. Terran's colorless eyes. The crowd jeering at me, throwing stones at my face, the iron stake. I squeeze my eyes shut and press my hands tightly to my ears in a desperate attempt to block it all out. But the maelstrom grows thicker. A curtain of darkness that threatens to pull me under. Papers fly up from the desk. The glass of Raffaele's lantern shatters. Stop. Stop. Stop! I will destroy everything in order to make it stop. I will destroy all of you. I grit my teeth as my fury swirls around me, seething and relentless, yearning to burst free. Through the whirlwind, I hear my father's harsh whisper. I know who you really are. Who will ever want you, Adelina? My fury heightens. Everyone. They will cower at my feet, and I will make them bleed. Then the shrieking fades. My father's voice vanishes, leaving memories of it trembling in the air. I stay on the ground, my entire body shaking with the absence of my unexpected anger, my face wet with tears. Raffaele keeps his distance. We stare at each other for a long time until he finally walks over to help me to my feet. He gestures at the chair next to his table. I sit gratefully, soaking in the sudden peace. My muscles feel weak and I can barely keep my head up. I have a sudden urge to sleep, to dream away my exhaustion. After a while, Raffaele clears his throat. Firmidity and Caldera, the twin angels of fear and fury, he whispers. Amber for the hatred buried in one's chest. Nightstone for the darkness in oneself, the strength of fear. He hesitates, then looks me in the eye. Something blackens your heart, something deep and bitter. It has festered inside you for years, nurtured and encouraged. I've never felt anything like it. My father was the one who nurtured it. I shiver, remembering the horrible illusions that have answered my call. In the corner of the room, my father's ghost lurks, partially hidden behind the ivy wall. He's not really there. He's an illusion. He's dead. But there's no mistaking it. I can see his silhouette waiting for me, his presence cold and haunting. I look away from him, lest Raffaele think I'm losing my mind. What? I begin, then clear my throat. What does it mean? Raffaele just gives me a sympathetic nod. He seems reluctant to discuss it any further, and I find myself eager to move on as well. We'll see how Enzo feels about this and what this means for your training. He goes on in a more hesitant tone. He frowns. It may take some time before you'll be considered a member of the Dagger Society. Wait, I say, I don't understand. Am I not already one of you? Raffaele crosses his arms and looks at me. No, not yet. The Dagger Society is made up of young elites who have proven themselves capable of calling upon their powers whenever needed. They can control their talents with a level of precision that you cannot yet grasp. Do you remember how Enzo saved you? The way he controlled fire? You need to be your abilities master. You will arrive there, I'm sure. But you're not there yet. The way Raffaele says all this stirs a warning in me. If I'm not a dagger yet, then what am I? What happens next? You're an apprentice. We need to see if we can train you to qualify. And what happens if I don't qualify? Raffaele's eyes, so warm and sweet earlier, now seem dark and frightening. A couple of years ago, he says gently, I recruited a boy into our society who could call the rain. He seemed promising at the time. We had high hopes for him. A year passed. He could not learn to master his abilities. Did you hear about that drought that hit northern Kanetra back then? I nod. My father had cursed the rise in wine prices, and rumor had it that Estensia was forced to cull 100 prized horses because they couldn't afford to feed them. People starved. The king sent out the Inquisition and killed hundreds during the riots. Raffaele sighs. The boy caused that drought by accident, and he could not stop it. He fell into panic and frustration. People blamed Malfetos, of course. The temples burned Malfetos at the stake in hopes that sacrificing us would lift the drought. The boy started acting strange and erratic, causing a public scene, by trying to conjure rain right in the middle of a market square, sneaking off to the harbor at night to try to pull at the waves and so forth. Enzo was not pleased. Do you see? Someone who cannot learn to control his energy is a danger to us all. We do not operate for free. Keeping you safe here, feeding and clothing and sheltering you, training you. This all costs coin and time. But most of all, it costs our name and reputation to those loyal to us. You are an investment and a risk. In other words, you need to prove that you're worth it. Raffaele pauses to take my hand. I don't like to frighten you, but I will not hide from you how seriously we take our mission. This is no game. We cannot afford a weak link in a country that wants us dead. His grip tightens, and I will do everything in my power to make sure you are a strong link. He's trying to comfort me, even in his honesty, but there's something he's not saying. In the brief silent spaces between his words, I hear everything else I need to know. They'll be watching me. I need to prove that I can conjure my powers again and that I can wield them with precision. If for some reason I can't control my abilities, they won't just cast me out of the Dagger Society. I've seen their faces, where they stay and what they do. I know that Kenetra's crown prince leads them. I know too much. A weak link in a world that wants us dead. That weak link could be me. If I cannot pass their tests, then they will do to me what they must have done with the boy who could not control the rain. They will kill me.
Raffaele Laurent Bassette. Midnight. The entire Fortunata court is asleep, and Raffaele sits alone in his bedchamber, turning the delicate pages of a book on the moons and tides, waiting. Finally, a soft knock sounds at his door. He rises in one smooth motion, his beaded silks glittering in the candlelight, and walks on silent feet to let in the visitor. Enzo enters with a sweep of dark robes, bringing with him the scent of wind, night, and death. Raffaele bows respectfully. Enzo closes the door behind him. "The Tournament of Storms," he whispers. "It's confirmed. The king and queen will make a rare appearance together there. It will be our best chance to strike both of them down." Raffaele nods. "Perfect." Enzo frowns at him. "You look tired," he says. "Are you all right?" Raffaele's client for the evening had left over an hour ago. "I'm fine," he decides to reply. "Did you see Adelina today?" "Yes." "And?" He tells Enzo about Adelina's test, how she reacted to each gem. He touches on her alignment with the Amber and Nightstone, her overwhelming attraction to the Twin Rocks. As he feared, Enzo narrows his eyes in interest. Raffaele shivers at his expression. He has recruited many elites for the young prince in the past few years, but none has ever shown Enzo's same alignment to Diamond. Such fiery ambition. Being near his energy is intoxicating. "Fear and fury," the prince says thoughtfully. In the candlelight, his eyes gleam. "Well, that's a first." Raffaele takes a deep breath. "Are you sure you want to do this?" he asks. Enzo keeps his gloved hands folded behind his back. "What do you advise?" "Get rid of her. Now. After all that trouble, you're asking me to kill her." Raffaele's voice is pained but firm. "Enzo, every single one of her memories was laced with darkness. It is an infection of the mind. Something is very wrong with her. She should have manifested early, as a child, but only now has she started to find her power. It has built up inside her, and the energy feels twisted in a way that disturbs me. She doesn't know it yet, but she is ravenous to use it. I don't know how she'll respond to our training." "You're afraid of her," Enzo murmurs, intrigued. "Or perhaps you're afraid of your fascination with her." Raffaele stays silent. "No, I'm afraid of your fascination with her." Enzo's eyes soften. "You know I trust you. I always have. But getting rid of her would be a waste. Adelina has the potential to be very useful." "She will be very useful," Raffaele agrees. The sapphire strands in his hair catch the light. He casts Enzo a sideways look. "If she'll obey you." "I will take back my throne soon," Enzo whispers. "And Malfettos will no longer live in fear." Raffaele could feel the threat of fire emanating from Enzo's body. Adelina has the potential to get us there, even if that potential lies within darkness. We've all seen what she can do. She has no reason to turn on us. Raffaele hesitates. Tread carefully, Reaper. We don't know the extent of her energy yet. Then train her. Let's see how she does. If your opinion of her remains, I'll get rid of her. But until then, he says, his eyes hardening, she stays. We are making a terrible mistake, Raffaele thinks, but bows anyway. As you command, Your Highness. As he does, his hair tumbles forward and exposes his neck. Enzo leans closer. Then he reaches out and gently pushes Raffaele's collar aside. Ugly red bruises circle the consort's lower neck, as if someone had tried to choke him. Only now, as Enzo touches Raffaele's chin and tilts his face in the direction of the light, does the faint purple bruising at the edges of his lips become noticeable. Enzo looks Raffaele in the eyes. Did one of your clients do this to you? Raffaele's eyes stay downcast. He adjusts his collar back into place, then brushes his hair across one shoulder in a glossy rope. He says nothing, knowing that his silence answers Enzo's question. Tell me the name, Enzo murmurs. Raffaele doesn't speak for a moment. Most of his clients are gentle with him, even in their passion. But not all. Memories from earlier in the evening return. Memories of rough hands on his neck, shoving him against the wall, striking his face, insults whispered harshly into his ear. It happened on very rare occasions, and he did not like troubling Enzo with the details. Raffaele's work is important to the daggers. After all, he might not have the same powers that the others do. But while his power cannot kill, it does hypnotize. Many of his clients fall so feverishly in love with him that they become loyal patrons to the daggers. Political alliances are made in his bed. Still, the work comes with its dangers. I should tell my madam first. She will privately fine my client for his abuse and ban him from seeing me. Instead, he meets Enzo's gaze. His gentle heart hardens. But not this time. Some deserve punishment greater than a fine. Count Maurizio Saldana, he replies. Enzo nods once. His expression doesn't change, but the scarlet streaks in his eyes burn bright. He presses a gloved finger against Raffaele's chest. His voice is a quiet command. Next time, do not keep secrets from me. The next morning, inquisitors find Count Maurizio Saldana's dismembered body nailed to his front door, his mouth suspended in a scream, his corpse burned black beyond recognition.
Magic is a shortened term derived from Maggiano's tricks, coined from the exploits of the famous young charlatan Maggiano, who was never captured by the Inquisition. Essays by Raffaele Laurent Bassette. Adelina Amuteru. Violetta was afraid of thunder. When we were very little, she would sneak into my bedchamber whenever a storm rolled through. She'd climb into my bed, wake me, and curl her little body against mine, and I'd wrap an arm around her and hum our mother's lullaby as the storm raged outside. I'm not proud to admit it, but I've always liked her helplessness. It made me feel powerful. In those small moments, I was the better one. This is how my dream starts tonight. A dark storm rages outside my windows. I dream that I wake up in my bedchamber to find Violetta huddled beside me under the blankets, her back turned to me, her body trembling, the curls of her dark hair spread against my pillow. I smile sleepily. It's all right, mi Violettina, I whisper. I put my arm around her shoulders and start to hum. It's only a storm. It will get worse, she whispers back. Her voice sounds strange, like a hiss, inhuman. I stop humming. My smile fades. Violetta? I murmur. I move my arm and roll her to face me. Where Violetta's face should be, there is instead nothing. The bed collapses beneath me, and suddenly I'm falling. I fall down, down, down. I fall forever. Splash. I struggle to the surface, gasping, and wipe water from my eyelashes. Where am I? I'm surrounded on all sides by what looks like a still ocean with no land in sight. Above, the sky is charcoal gray, the ocean is black. I'm in the waters of the underworld, the realm of the dead. I know this immediately because the light here is not like the light of the living world, finished and whole, chasing the shadows away with its warmth. The light here is dead, faint enough to keep everything in a constant state of gray. No colors, no sounds, only a quiet sea. I look down in the dark water. The sight sends a coil of terror through my stomach, deep, black, endless, filled with the gliding, ghostly silhouettes of monsters. Adelina. A whisper calls to me. I look to my side. A child walks on the surface of the ocean, her skin as pale as porcelain, her body skeletal under white silks, her long locks of black hair spread out across the ocean like a web of endless strands stretching as far as the eye can see. This is Firmidity, the angel of fear, the daughter of death. I want to scream, but no sound comes out. She leans down toward me. Where her eyes and nose and mouth should be, I can see only skin, like someone has stretched cloth tightly across her face. It had been her curled in my bedchamber, not Violetta. Fear is power, she whispers. Then from beneath the water's surface, a bony hand grabs me and pulls me under. I sit up in bed, trembling from head to toe. Everything vanishes, replaced with my empty chamber at the Fortunata court. Rain slaps weakly against my windows. After a few moments, I lean my head wearily against my arms. Images of my sister linger in my mind, fragments of ghosts. I wonder whether it's raining where Violetta is, and whether she is sleepless because of the thunder. What am I going to do? I try, as I always do, to grasp the energy buried deep inside me and pull it to the surface. But nothing's there. What if I can never do it again? Good, a part of me thinks. Maybe I shouldn't use my powers again. Yet this thought makes my stomach flip. What if I escape tonight? Run away from the daggers? Raphael's ominous words play over and over in my mind. He'd mentioned nations in the cold skylands that revere malfettos and elites. I could flee Kenetra and sail far north. But even as I consider it, I know it's dangerous and pointless. Stay calm, Adelina, and think. If I were to try running away from a group of young elites, how would I manage to stay ahead of them? They have finely honed powers. I don't. What I do have is the Inquisition Axis on my trail, probably combing their way through southern Kenetra at this very moment, waiting for me to make a wrong move. If I couldn't run from the Inquisition when I first tried to escape, how could I hope to evade the daggers now? They would never rest until they caught me. They'd silence me before I could potentially give away their secrets. They might catch me before I even reached the harbor, and even if I could board a ship to the Skylands, they may simply tail me there. They're probably watching me right now. I will forever be watching my back. My chances are close to impossible. So I contemplate my second option. What if I do become one of them? What more do I have to lose? I'm no safer on my own than if I remain with them. But if I want to survive, I need to stay and prove myself. And in order to do that, I not only need to learn how to control my energy, I also need to make some allies, some friends. Setting out alone hasn't exactly worked well for me. I shiver when I remember the reaction I had to the Nightstone, how whatever Raffaele did had forced a darkness from within me and brought it to the surface. What if that's who I am? Be true to yourself, Violetta once told me when I was trying in vain to win father over. But that's something everyone says and no one means. No one wants you to be yourself. They want you to be the version of yourself that they like. Fine. If I need to be liked, loved, then that's what I'll do. I'll win Enzo's approval, impress him. By the time dawn finally creeps into my room and bathes it in pale gold, I'm exhausted. I stir when someone knocks faintly on my door, probably the maid again. Come in, I call out. The door opens a little. It isn't the maid who has come to see me, but Raffaele. This time he's clad in a beautiful black robe trimmed with swirls of gold, his sleeves wide and billowing. Thin gold chains encircle both his forehead and his neck, hiding his throat from view, and his loose braid of hair cascades over one shoulder, strands of sapphire shimmering against the dark like a peacock's feather. His jewel-toned eyes are rimmed with bold lines of black powder. He looks even more stunning than I remember, and I turn away my stare in embarrassment. Good morning, he says, coming over to me and kissing me on both cheeks. He shows no signs of the hesitation he felt toward me after the gemstone incident. Enzo and the others have returned. He gives me a serious look. Let's not keep them waiting. I dress hurriedly. Raffaele guides me down into the secret tunnel again, the same direction we went when he tested my energy. This time, though, we continue walking past the room's door and farther down the tunnel until the darkness swallows us. Our footsteps echo. As we go, the ceiling seems to rise higher and higher. A cold, damp smell fills the air. How far does this go? I whisper. Raffaele's smooth voice floats to me from up ahead. Below the streets of Estensia lie the catacombs of the dead. The catacombs. I shiver. These tunnels lead all across the city, he continues. They connect some of our safe houses, the homes and estates of our patrons. There are so many tunnels and tombs under the city that a great number have been forgotten over the ages. It's wet down here. Spring rains. Luckily, we're on high ground. We finally reach a tall set of double doors. Gems embedded in the ancient wood gleam in the low light. I recognize them as the same types of gems Raffaele used to test me. I asked one of our elites to embed them, he explains. Only the heightened energy of an elite's touch can bond with gems. Their energy in turn moves the switches inside the doors to open them. He nods at me. Pay your respects, mi Adelinetta. We are in the realm of the dead now. He murmurs a brief prayer to Moritas, the goddess of death, for safe passage, and I follow his example. When we finish, he closes a hand over one of the door's embedded gems. The gems start to glow. As they do, an elaborate series of clicks sound out inside the wood, as if unlocking from within. I watch in wonder. An ingenious lock. Raffaele looks at me and a spark of sympathy seems to light his eyes. Be brave, he whispers. Then he throws his weight against the doors. They open. An enormous cavern the size of a ballroom looms before us. Lanterns on the walls illuminate pools of water that have collected along the floor. The walls are lined with stone archways and pillars that look like they were carved centuries ago, most standing tall, some collapsed and scattered on the ground. Glowing reflections of pale light on the water float, webbed and shifting against the stone. Everything takes on a greenish cast in here. I can hear the drip of water coming from somewhere far away. Illuminated frescoes of the gods decorate the walls, worn down from ancient receding water despite the artist's best efforts. I can tell immediately that the art is centuries old, a style from a different era. Along the walls are niches filled with dusty urns, holding the ashes of forgotten generations. But what really catches my attention is the small half-circle of people waiting down here for us. Aside from Enzo, there are four of them. Each is turned in our direction, wearing a dark blue cloak of the Dagger Society. Their expressions are hard to read, eerie in the dim light. I try to gauge their ages. They must be about my age. Those who survived the blood fever were children, after all. One dagger is enormous, his robes barely masking thick, muscular arms that seem like they could rip a man to pieces. Beside him is a girl who looks small and slight, with a hand resting easily on her hip. She's the only one who nods at me in greeting. An enormous golden eagle perches on her shoulder. I smile back hesitantly, my stare fixed nervously on the eagle. Beside her stands a lean boy, and last is a broad-shouldered girl with long copper curls, her skin too pale to be Kinetrin. A girl from the Skylands, perhaps? She crosses her arms and regards me with a slight tilt to her head, and her eyes seem cold and curious. My smile fades. Front and center before them stands Enzo, his hair the color of blood, his hands folded behind his back, and his gaze fixed unwaveringly on me. Gone is the hint of mischief in him that I saw when we first talked in my chamber. Today, his expression is hard and unforgiving. The young prince replaced with a cold-blooded assassin. The cavern's strange lighting casts a shadow over his eyes. We stop a few feet away from them. Raffaele addresses the group first. "This is Adelina Amuteru," he says, his voice clear and beautiful. "Our newest potential recruit. She has the power of illusion, the ability to trick one's perception of reality." I feel I should speak, but I'm not sure what to say, so I simply face them with as much courage as I can muster. Enzo looks at me. I don't know why, but I can feel myself drawn to him just like the first day we met. It is the straightness of his shoulders, the regal lift of his head. My alignment to ambition stirs at the sight. "Tell me, Adelina," he begins. His words echo in the cavern. "Have you ever heard the rhyme, 'A newborn babe takes its first breath and creates a storm that rains down death?" "Yes," I reply. "Nothing is isolated. Do one thing, however small, and it will affect something else on the other side of the world. In a way, you are already connected to each of us." He takes a step closer to me. The others remain still. "You are the first elite to align so strongly with Nightstone. There is a darkness in you, something that gives you immense strength." He narrows his eyes. "Today I want to bring that to the surface and find a way for you to call upon it as you wish. Learn how to bend it to your will. Do you accept?" "Do I have a choice?" After a moment's silence, I lift my chin. "Yes, Your Highness." Enzo gives me an approving nod. "Then we shall use everything within our power to evoke yours." Raffaele steps away from me. The fact that I'm now standing alone sends a spike of uncertainty through my chest, and I find myself wishing that he, the only person in here who doesn't frighten me, would stay by my side. The others talk in low voices among themselves. I look around the half-circle of their faces, searching for help, but the only kindness I get comes from the girl with the eagle on her shoulder. She sees my anxiety and gives me a subtle, encouraging nod. I try to latch onto that. Enzo raises one hand in the air. "Let's begin." Then he snaps his fingers, and every torchlight in the cavern flickers out at once. The room goes dark. For a second, I panic. I'm completely blind. The dizziness that I felt yesterday with the Nightstone now floods my senses. This is one of my worst fears, that I might someday lose my only good eye, and that I will then live in eternal darkness for the rest of my life. I look wildly around, blinking. Nothing but silence. And occasionally a gust of cold wind, a murmur of breath, an echoing footstep. My heart pounds. Please let there be a little light. I squint hard into the darkness, trying to force my sight to adjust. Right as I'm able to make out the faint outlines of the cavern floor, I notice that all of the daggers are gone. Suddenly, Enzo's voice comes from somewhere in the darkness. "Spider. Star thief." Its deepness now frightens me. I tense. Nothing happens. Then out of nowhere, rushes of wind, the beating of wings. Suddenly there are thousands, millions of them. Squealing little creatures with fleshy wings beating against me, whirling around me in invisible circles in the blackness. I scream, then fall into a crouch as they swarm. My arms cover my head. Bats. They're bats. Their tiny claws cut at my skin. I squeeze my eyes shut. Someone large shoves me violently backward. I go flying, then fall hard to the ground. The blow knocks all the wind out of me. I gasp for air. A sharp metal edge slices across my upper arm. I cry out, my arms flying up in defense, but another cut slits open the skin of my other arm. Warm blood trickles out. I turn my head frantically from side to side. Where is my attacker? I can't see a thing. Someone kicks me in the back. I arch at the sharp pain. Another kick. And then the feeling of rough hands grabbing me by my robe, hauling me up in the air. I grasp desperately for my power, wishing I could pull it from deep within. But nothing happens. As I struggle, a low growl of a voice comes from somewhere in front of my face. What wolf, Spider snaps. She's a little lamb. I clench my teeth and struggle, kicking out with my legs. I strike only air and collapse to the floor. She has a bite, someone says elsewhere in the cavern. It sounds like Raffaele. One lantern flickers on in the cavern. Its glow catches me off guard, and I squint in its direction. The millions of bats flutter fiercely in the new light, screaming, then they swarm into a cloud and disappear down one of the cavern's dark tunnels, as if they'd never been here in the first place. I glance around. A short distance away is the hulking boy who must be Spider and the girl with the eagle. Elsewhere, standing by pillars and walls in the shadows, I notice others. One of them snickers. Thin trickles of blood drip down my arms. The cuts look smaller than I expect, considering how much they sting. They're not even trying, I think feverishly. They're toying with me. How had Spider even been able to see me in the darkness? The light vanishes. My vision adjusts faster this time, and in the darkness I can see the faint silhouette of Spider crouching. He attacks again. This time he rushes at me with terrifying speed and disappears from view right before he can reach me. I look around for him, cursing my missing eye and poor peripheral vision. He materializes on my weak side. Then he catches me around the neck before I can stop him. His arm tightens, choking me. I struggle. Sight. I realize abruptly that his powers must give him the ability to see where others cannot. I'll have a sheepskin decorating my floor tonight, he says. I throw an elbow as hard as I can. He must not have expected me to fight back because I hit him hard in his throat. He gags, releasing me again. I fall to my knees, gasping. Spider whirls around, his eyes narrowed at me in rage, and I brace myself for another attack. Enough, Enzo says quietly. The word is a low, disapproving command that emerges from the shadows. Spider steps away from me. I crumple in relief, sucking up air in the darkness. The torch lights all flicker on again. We stare at each other, the young dagger's eyes green and gruff, mine wide and stricken. I don't feel anything in my chest except for the pounding of my heart. Then Spider straightens up and sheathes his blade. He doesn't bother helping me up. One-eyed weakling, he says, his voice full of disdain. Should have left you to the Inquisition and saved us all the trouble. He turns away from me. A spark of anger shoots through me. I imagine what it would be like if I strangled him in return, my dark illusions flowing down his throat and blocking his air. Can my powers do that? The whispers hiding in my mind nod, hungry and eager. Yes, yes. Coward, I whisper to his back. He doesn't hear me, but the girl with the eagle, Star Thief, I suppose, does. She blinks. Enzo studies me with interest as Raffaele whispers something in his ear. Do they approve? A moment later, Enzo raises his voice.
Windwalker.
Windwalker? I look around the cavern searching for my next opponent. Finally, I catch a glimpse of her. She's the tall, pale girl, the one who doesn't look Kanetrin. She chuckles as she steps towards me, sleek and menacing, and I take a step back. With pleasure, Your Highness, she says to Enzo. My breathing is too rapid. Calm down. Focus. But the force of the last attack has left me trembling, and the anticipation of what might come next sends prickles of terror down my skin. Spider has the power to see in complete darkness. What can the Windwalker do? Fly, perhaps? Then, a piercing scream shatters my senses. I flinch. My hands fly to my ears in a vain attempt to shut out the sound. But it only grows worse. The sound destroys everything around me, turning the world into blinding streaks of red and piercing every corner of my mind. I can't see. I can't think. It goes on and on, a razor-sharp knife digging into my ears. I must be bleeding. I feel the dull sensation of cold stone against my skin. Tears stream down my cheeks. I've fallen, I realize dully. Something stirs faintly in the depths of my body, but I reach out for it and miss. What kind of power is this? How do I fight it? How do you shut out a scream that comes from inside your mind? I try to struggle to my feet, but the scream overwhelms me. It ripples through the air again and again, threatening to drown me. Somehow, through the chaos, I hear Windwalker's voice against my ear. It sounds like she's right beside me. When I jerk my head to the side, I see her. She laughs.
Watch your step, little wolf, she taunts.
Suddenly, I feel myself lifted off the ground by an invisible curtain of wind. Windwalker's arms are stretched out in my direction. She lifts me higher, then makes a cutting gesture with one hand. Wind rushes past my ears. I fly across the chamber. My back hits the wall hard. I crumple to the ground like a broken doll. All around me, the screaming continues. I can't do this. I curl into a ball as Windwalker comes closer. She kneels before me. All I can make out of her now is her sly smile. The scream in my mind is shattering my soul, and the pain of being thrown makes my breath short. The scream sounds like my own. I see myself being dragged through the rain by my hair, my father's face staring straight into mine. Behind us, Violetta screams at him to stop. He ignores her. I can't take it anymore. My anger rises. I reach for the energy just out of my grasp. My father's ghost hovers before me and my sister's shrieks surround us. Disoriented, I let out a strangled cry and claw at the open air. My hand strikes something. Suddenly, the shrieks around me stop and my father and sister vanish. This time I don't hear any more snickers. To my shock, Windwalker is hunched several feet away, holding her neck. A thin trickle of blood runs down her hand where I'd raked her with my fingernails. With a start, I realize that I must have struck her when I thought I was striking at my father. The rage inside me still churns, a black, seething fury almost within my reach. I grit my teeth at her. Is that it? I suddenly snap. Attacking me while I'm defenseless? Windwalker stares at me in silence. Then she removes her hand to show me the gash I've caused. You're far from defenseless. Several thin lines are scored into the skin of her throat. Without a word, she walks over and helps me onto my trembling feet. Not too bad, she says, without a hint of malice in her voice. You like being provoked, I can tell. Gradually, my anger fades into bewilderment. Did she just compliment me? What? I manage to say. Is your power exactly? She laughs at my expression. She seems completely unconcerned about her scratched neck and is somehow friendlier to me.
Whatever the wind can do, whistle, scream, howl, uproot you from the earth, I can do too. She leaves me. All around the cavern, the others whisper among themselves, their voices echoing in the empty space. Finally, Enzo steps forward, his hands folded calmly behind his back. Better. He tightens his lips, but not enough. I wait there, swaying on my feet, regaining my breath. His eyes sear me to the bone, bringing with them a wave of terror and excitement. The problem, Adelina, he says as he approaches me, is that you simply aren't afraid. My heartbeat quickens. I am afraid, I whisper. But my words sound unconvincing. What is he going to do to me? You know your life is not at risk, he continues. You don't embrace your darkness unless you are staring straight at death. Therefore, you cannot connect with your fear and your fury. He unfolds his hands from behind his back. Let me see if we can correct that. A ring of fire bursts to life around us, turning the dark cavern into an illuminated space. The flames stretch to the ceiling. I jump away in terror at the heat against my skin. A scream threatens to bubble up from my throat. No, no, no. Not fire, anything but that. All I can see are Enzo's eyes locked on mine, dark and determined. So much fire. I'm not tied to the stake. I'm okay. I'm okay. But I don't believe myself. We are back at my burning. The Inquisition is going to kill me in front of everyone, happy to watch fire consume me in punishment for my father's death. The gods save me. Suddenly, the attacks from the other elites pale in comparison. The flames feel like they're closing in. They are closing in. I can't breathe. He's forcing me to relive the feeling of staring straight at death. Enzo reaches me. As flames roar all around us, he leans close enough for me to feel the heat of his body through his robes, the sheer power hidden underneath. The fear that has been building in my chest since Spider first attacked me now rushes through me in an unstoppable current, turning my limbs numb. One of his hands touches the small of my back. A violent, irresistible wave of heat emanates from his touch and pulses through my body, scalding me. The flames around us lick at the edges of my sleeves. I watch in terror as the fabric curls, blackening. Everything about Enzo whispers of danger, of murder in the name of righteousness. I'm desperate to pull away. I ache for more. I tremble uncontrollably, caught in the middle. I know you crave the fear. His breath scorches the skin of my exposed neck. Let it build, nurture it, and it will give back all of your care tenfold. I try to concentrate, but all I can feel is the heat. The stake, the pile of wood at my feet. The eyes of my dead father, forever haunting my dreams. You are a killer, his ghost whispers. But how many have the Inquisition killed? How many more will they kill? Wouldn't I have been one of the Inquisition's victims had the daggers not come to my rescue? With the fire all around us, Enzo's hand hot against my silks, with his words in my ears and my body still trembling from the other's attacks, the combination of my fear, hatred, anger, and desire finally fuse into one. I can feel the uncontrollable darkness growing inside me, millions of threads that connect everything in the world to everything else. The badness inside Enzo, the wickedness inside everyone around us, growing until I'm able to reach down and close my mind around a handful of those threads and pull on them. The darkness bows to me, eager for my embrace. I close my eye, open my heart to the feeling, and soak in the delight of vengeance. Show me what you can do, my father's ghost whispers. Black silhouettes rise up out of the ground, their shapes demonic and their eyes scarlet red, their fangs dripping blood. They gather around us, growing taller and taller until they reach the cavern's ceiling. They wait patiently for my command. I'm swept away, both giddy with joy at the feeling of power and terrified that I am completely helpless to it. Enzo removes his hand. The sudden lack of contact distracts me, and in a flash, my silhouettes disappear. The demons shrink into the ground. Enzo's columns of fire vanish. We're back in the heavy silence of the cavern as if nothing had happened. My shoulders droop from the effort. Without the fire, the space has returned to its eerie green glow. The others aren't laughing anymore. I glance at Raffaele. He looks stricken, his brows furrowed in a tragic line. Enzo steps away from me. I sway on weak legs. If I didn't know better, I'd say he seems surprised himself. All I know is that I want to do it again. I want Enzo to touch me. I want to feel that flow of power, and I want to see the other dagger's intimidation. I want something more. It is pointless to believe what you see if you only see what you believe. The Admiral, from the Requiem of Gods, Volume 11. Translated by Cheval. Adelina Amuteru. 2 days after my testing, a mob of drunken gamblers burn a malfetto in the middle of a market square. Several days later, another murder. As if killing us will somehow make the city prosperous again. From the hidden courtyard that overlooks Estensia, I glimpse the second victim dragged, sobbing into a main street by a mob of shouting people. Inquisitors stand by and pretend not to notice. I need to learn faster. The world is closing in on us. Both were malfettos accused of having powers, of being elites. Raffaele tells me today as we sit together before my bedchamber mirror. Neither were, of course. But their families turned on them anyway. The Inquisition pays well for such information, and gold is hard to pass up in times like these. I look at the array of creams and powders scattered on the dresser top, then glance at my reflection in the mirror. My maid took me this morning to a private bathhouse in the court and washed me until I gleamed and glistened. My skin now smells of rose and honey. I'm surprised at how quickly I've become used to such luxuries. I turn my gaze back to Raffaele. Why didn't the daggers save them? I ask. Raffaele's reply is one that answers nothing. He picks up a tub of cream. These hunts happen too often. We react when necessary. I try not to look bothered by his answer, but secretly I dwell on his real meaning. We didn't risk saving them because they were not elites. What are you going to do to me? I ask. You stay at the Fortunata Court, you will need to look the part. I recoil at the thought of transforming into a consort. Raffaele must have sensed the sudden shift in my energy because he adds, Would you prefer to be recognized by an inquisitor? He dabs a touch of cold cream on my face. No one will touch you, you have my word, but looking the part will give you some freedom. The cream tingles. I watch, amazed as it brings the warmth out in my olive skin. He runs an ivory comb through my hair. Occasionally his fingers brush the base of my neck, sending shivers of pleasure down my spine. There is a precision to his gestures that speaks volumes about his talents as a consort. I have a fleeting thought of what being his client might be like. His skin warm against mine, his lips soft on my neck, his hands smooth and experienced roaming. Raffaele lifts an eyebrow at me through the mirror. What you're thinking will cost you at least 5,000 gold talents, mi Adelinetta. He teases gently, tilting his head in a subtle movement sends blood rushing to my cheeks. 5,000 gold talents? A night? I breathe. An hour. Raffaele replies, still working his way through my hair. 5,000 gold talents, an hour. In one night, Raffaele can fetch my father's annual salary. You must have single-handedly turned the Fortunata court into the wealthiest court in the country, I say. He smiles shyly, but behind it I sense something sad. My grin fades. Raffaele rubs a fine oil into my scalp and then finishes combing. He turns his attention to other details, touching my eyelid and lashes with a black, shimmering powder that hides the strand's silver color, rubbing an ointment on my nails that makes them gleam, smoothing my brows into perfect brushstrokes. I tremble again as his finger